But no, that it's what I meant about the audience being another character in the show is mm-hmm. that you don't, like, you walk out of a movie or you're watching a movie at home and you might say something to, you know, your family members or whatever, but it's more of a internal experience. Whereas with live theater, because you are part of it, you're in the moment, it becomes a very connected type thing. You will exchange eye rolls, or you'll laugh with the people next to you, or, you know, when you're at a show, something will happen and the people in front of you or behind you, you'll turn around and say something to them. And I think that's what makes the difference, is that the audience is an integral part of a show, and you get that connection and you get that community feeling.
Thank you. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
There's no business like show business.
And away we go.
Hello again.
Hi.
And welcome to the Art and Business of Community Theater, presented by the Monroe Community Players, featuring the Green Room Groupies. Each episode, we discuss issues relevant to the operation of a successful theater, and how to produce the highest quality shows for your audience, and we sometimes slip into other topics as well. You understand how green room conversations go. I'm David Ward, still the de facto leader of our little band.
We're aboard now.
that was a bit of a Freudian slip of some kind there. Looking around the green room today, I see quite the full house, and we're quite excited about that. I see
Carol Slifka,
Brian Burchett Ross,
Ron Roberts,
Kathleen McBee,
and the inimitable
Robert Yeoman.
Here we go.
What does inimitable mean?
You can't imitate him.
Oh, no.
I think I was using the word correctly.
Yeah, that's perfect. Perfect. Yeah.
The unique. Well, here we are back in business. We're all. I lost my script already. This feels just like old times. Here we are in the new year. I think this is our first recording in 2024, isn't it? It's not the first one. We haven't recorded this episode, anything.
Oh, we haven't recorded. No, right. We've had one drop.
We'd have episodes air. But,
yes.
But
yes.
Because of that time lag.
You are correct, sir.
Thank you. We are back here. But we've had some wonderful things happen to us over the holidays, which... doesn't mean anything to those of you listening to this for the first time in July, but we asked...
Catch up.
We asked a couple episodes ago, send us some Christmas cards. Let us know you're out there. And what a thrill. We got some responses. If you go to our Facebook page right now, in fact, you can see probably one of the most creative ones we got, which is a picture. Oh, Carol's... We thought it might be Carol who did it. So, but here she's looking for it.
Right.
We got this wonderful postcard which showed each of the groupies, mm-hmm. Those who have appeared on air to date, in our various poses of what we do our catchphrases, gimmicks, our running gags. So, for example, I'm there as Oliver Warbucks, which, as you all know, I've played twice. What? Get that out of the way. Carol is there as Annie.
Which I don't understand. I don't get the connection.
I think because you don't have running gag, we better fix that.
Okay. But I enjoyed it nonetheless extremely. I always wanted curly hair. So.
Bob is there in an outfit from Cats, though he thinks he looks like
Craven the Hunter from
Spider-Man comic books. Ron's in his Detroit Tigers outfit. Kathleen is there ready to go see a show with her Broadway tickets. Brian is... is there
with
his
out with
good
my
friend Matthew Broderick, and we even have Bill McCluskey up there in a Shakespearean outfit. I think that's everybody.
And DeVoe.
Oh, and DeVoe is there in her dancing outfit too. So it was a wonderful surprise. We thank you so much for that. Whoever the anonymous groupie is who sent that in, thank you. We really did appreciate it.
I think I have an idea who it was. I think it's one of our groupies.
I hope it's not. I think it's one of our groupies out there. We have yet to have the pleasure of meeting. Don't worry. The DNA samples have been taken from the card.
We tried.
And we're just waiting for the results from the lab.
Our best investigative deduction there. We could not figure it out.
Not that we get too hung up on that sort of thing. Also, a quick shout out to Corey, one of our regular groupies, who also responded to an issue, to a question on Spotify concerning sound systems that we talked about a while ago, and just pointing out how expensive sound systems can be.
Mm. Hi, Corey. How's our baby doing? He's got to be getting old by now.
Yeah.
So, that's a throwback from a show, folks. Just
Yes. But we're doing so we're excited. I don't know if it's really important that we have a two-way communication here, but, you know, that's part of what we like, is to know that you're out there and see if we can start some of these discussions, because we think that's so important to the future of community theater, that we are having discussions, that we're all working and talking together. Because even though one could think that we are in competition with each other for audiences, the reality is I think there's plenty of audience for everybody to go around, and what we really need to be focusing on is just making community theater better.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No disagreements there? Okay. Nope. Bob's just staring at me sternly, so I'm not sure. Sure, what's
guilty
going on over there?
Tells all.
he's thinking.
So
nothing funny.
So we have a little different kind of show for you today. Not terribly different, but something that we're trying. It's a two-parter.
Ooh.
Today is part one. That will blend into part two concerning telling the story of community theater and what it means to us and how to market that story. So part one is actually to talk about the stories of community theater and why it's important to us and why it would be important to your audiences. Later on in the episode, we are going to have a review from Broadway Brian. Once again, he'll be reviewing Spamalot that he just recently saw on Broadway. Well, I say recently, a couple months ago now.
November.
But we're looking forward to that. So hang in there if you're only tuning in for that.
You really shouldn't be.
No. What
you're waiting
for our review. Well,
wait for it. It's coming. It'll be worth it.
Nice thing about Spamalot is it is available now for community theaters to do. So. Mm. So I think it's worth talking about that show, especially if you're doing musical theaters and you haven't done it yet. But anyway, so what I thought we would try something is just talk about our favorite moments and things that we like about theater. They can be related to the Monroe Community Players or to any other theater group you may have done something with. You know, but what keeps us each doing it? And I'm hoping that it'll spur some thoughts and feelings among our listeners, so that they help you better enable you to tell your stories as well. As we're because I still think, despite our talk about marketing and everything, a lot of it is still person to person.
Mm-hmm.
I remember some episodes ago when I talked about relatives who don't seem to get it. This
one
is
one of my favorites. Yeah.
This is how maybe this will help you to explain to the relatives and help them to get it. To understand what it's about. So with that, let's open the floor. I know my voice is just going up and down today, but you think it's okay? Okay.
Well, it's not like we can change it.
Well, I'm just hearing, you know, different emphasis on words. Let's open the floor. Who's got a favorite moment? What's your number one favorite moment in theater? What made you realize that this is where you need to be for the rest of your life?
When you got the audience completely silent after your speech.
And which moment was that?
Death of a Salesman. He dies.
Gave it away?
Spoiler.
Is it really? Or could it have been a clone from episode 4 of it?
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, got it. It's not really Willie. It's from an alternate timeline. But yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and I'll agree with you. When I played Prospero in The Tempest, I loved it when we were at ActFest, which, of course, I've talked about before, is a theater competition. And by the way, I should give a free plug to the Community Theater Association of Michigan on this. I will be part of a roundtable for them to talk about competing in ActFest later in February. Oh. I should have brought the dates with me, because by the time this episode drops, that event will still be coming up, but it's at the end of February. I think it's the 24th. Well, our show is the weekend of the
16th, 17th, 18th.
It's that following Tuesday, I believe, so it's probably the 20th. So it sounds great. So February 20th, Community Theater Association of Michigan. It's a round table. I think it's open to members and non-members alike about competing in ActFest. But anyway, when I was in there and to hear the silence from my peers, essentially our peers, you know, people who do theater as well. Those are great moments when you know you have them and they're listening to every word. And there was no snoring, so I'm very sure that they were listening.
The bags of rustling rotted fruit.
Oh, yeah, well, and that's one of those moments is when you hear silence, but when you're giving a speech and all you hear is rustling and coughing and stomping and
let's open those
people looking for things,
now.
You know you don't have them. But when you just hear silence,
yeah,
that's what you want. Unless you're doing, you know, The Odd Couple.
Oh.
Because they should be laughing.
Right. But now it's garbage.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've been thinking about this quite a bit, actually, and there's a few kind of seminal moments for me. And I think the first one, it's not an actual moment, but an experience, is when I directed Honk Jr. Mm-hmm. at the middle school. And just to see those kids willing to do basically anything I asked of them, and so enthusiastically, and just the energy they brought to it. And I remember at auditions, there was this one kid who, he had a nice voice. It was a musical. He had a nice voice, but was a bigger klutz than me, which is hard to do. But he was so endearing. I really wanted to put him in the show, but there wasn't really a place for him. So I created a character, which is probably illegal. But there were a bunch of, you know, the Honk is the story of the ugly duckling. So the other ducklings, I added a duckling. So the other ducklings were like puffy and fluffy and whatever. Well, his name was Steve. Created it, Steve, and they all were wearing bibs with their names on them. And so the S was backwards and the letters were all crooked. And then anytime they were on stage, he was supposed to, and he did, like turn the wrong way and go the wrong place. And the other ducklings had to keep him in line because he wasn't. And it was just so charming and so delightful. And that's when I thought, you know, this, I'm having so much fun with this that I really need to keep on with this. Probably the moment that threw me for a loop the most, that I think is really reflection on my ability to not totally bust out laughing if the occasion doesn't call for it, was when I was doing Exit Laughing. And our stage manager pulled a prank, and we were digging through kitty litter, and he had put something in there that didn't belong there. The audience couldn't see it, but all of us who were digging could see it. And I looked over, and he was standing just off stage by the light panel, and he was just doubled over laughing. And that was... That's when I really felt like part of the community. You know, that's when I thought, this is a family. This is to know that you know someone well enough to where you can do this kind of thing and they'll be fine with it. But as far as an actor's moment, for me, it would be in Twilight of the Golds.
Oh.
Two different moments. When I did my monologue.
Mm-hmm.
And I could hear somebody in the audience like sob.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, that worked. And the other time was when I was having the conversation with the guy who played my son on stage. And we were exploring reasons why he might have gay. Brian knows what line I'm talking about. And there was a line I said, which got a big laugh. And that was just, that was a really big moment for me too, to know that I could, in the same play, make the same audience both laugh and cry. Mm-hmm. That was very powerful.
Oh,
so
that's great.
Those are my favorites.
Well, that's very cool, Carol. I think I'm just want to piggyback off of Dave's when he talked about The Odd Couple. Odd Couple was my first show with players after not doing shows for 30 years. And yet that bug was still there, that itch was still there that I wanted to get back on the stage. It had been since high school. And I remember our very first time, my very first show, after all these rehearsals and getting to know this totally new group of people, we go out as the Pigeon Sisters, Holly Sisson and I, and we get applauded off stage off of our very first. And that's been the only time I've been applauded off stage. But it was just, so for me, that was like the affirmation that, okay, yeah, you can still do this. I mean, you can be part of this. And I think for all of us, it's that final audience perspective and feedback that is the cherry on top for everything we do.
Now that, and you just said that was your first show with players. Now, had you seen the producers?
No.
Okay.
That was an inside joke. Well, not so inside, but we may have mentioned it an episode or two ago.
Two moments for me. Probably the first one was the first show I ever did, which was in high school, which was 10 Little Indians. And, you know, you're 16, 17 years old, and you think it's like the greatest thing since Pants with Pockets. Oh, my God, we just did the show, blah, 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 blah. And, of course, your friends are like, oh, dude, that was horrible, blah, 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 right? But I want to credit the English department at my high school because we got off stage and there was my journalism teacher crying. There were two other English teachers. They didn't care. They said, it doesn't matter. It's the fact that you took that up, that chance, and you did it, because there's people out there that would never do that. But yet you did. You took that opportunity. And that stuck with me. so that was one. And then the other one was when I just got divorced. Pardon me. And I had been off stage for a while, and Players was doing Arsenic and Old Lace. And I went into audition. I'm like, oh, maybe I'll get like the cop or whatever, you know. And Brad Bowman called me one night and said, I want to offer you Mortimer. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's funny. I said, really, what part do you want me to? He's like, no, I want you to be Mortimer. I'm like, no, Brad, please, don't. I said, I know somebody else who was there who would have been much better than me. And he's like, yeah, well, that's not going to work out, so it's going to be you. I'm like, oh, so I'm not your first choice. But no, but it was one of those moments where, you know, you're doubting yourself personally because of your personal life and everything that's going on. And it really allowed me to just step in to be somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of those moments where it just helped me get through a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, looking back at that cast in that moment, that was what I needed. And that's really what, to me, that's what community theater is. Mm-hmm. It's that other family that you choose to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, and maybe like families, we sometimes argue amongst ourselves, but we do, we certainly do. I think that bonding that you get through theater is very unlike most any other places. So I've seen, and I've mentioned before, and I hope to have her on this podcast shortly, but, you know, it's been described by people in sports who've moved to theater, just say, hey, this is the kind of same feeling I get at sports and being on a team. And it's really something that you just don't get from other types of activities. It's very similar to brotherhoods of a fraternity or sorority and things like that. You really do form strong bonds. And frankly, you know, several of us in this room, we've been doing it with the same group for 40 some years.
Yeah.
Actually, this April or May, will be my 40th anniversary since I stepped foot in Monroe Community Players to audition for Bullshot Crewman.
Yeah.
Wow.
40 years.
In fact, this month is my 40th anniversary when I opened with a Philadelphia Story.
Oh, congratulations.
I think that was in January. Bob was in that show as well.
And Bullshot.
And then Bullshot. Bullshot was the next one, I think.
30 years for me this month, too. Mm-hmm. Yikes.
Wow.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, 40 years for me. So, yeah, 30 years. Wow, cool.
Yeah.
But no, so we know what that power is. And I was going to say, so one of the moments, as an actor, I think, you know, we all get, I got involved probably way back when, back in fourth grade or whatever. I learned to like the attention that theater brought to you. But I think the real magic happens when you realize it's more than that. Mm-hmm. It's not just about the applause for you. It's what you can do for other people. So to take that, you know, fast forward 30 some years to directing Mary Poppins, when I think was one of my greatest pleasures, wasn't, you know, I wasn't on stage, I wasn't getting the applause, but when they did that supercalifragilistic number that literally stopped the show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because the audience just kept applauding and applauding and applauding. They never stood up, we don't know why, but they kept applauding. You know, I had tears in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point it was like, it felt like I've, this is it. This is what I was meant for.
Mm-hmm.
haven't recaptured that feeling, sadly, since. but I won't say that. I think I have now, because I take that appreciation as a director to be able to create something that brings joy to people.
Mm-hmm.
And then in other things, you know, I think I take that same pleasure when I do what I feel is very little on stage, though. But then, going back to Twilight of the Golds, to have a young man come up and say, oh, you were savage.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, just so thrilled at my performance. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's like, I was just me. Mm-hmm. Recently, we had some auditions when another auditioner came up and said, you're good. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay. you know, I've learned to take the compliments. But I think sometimes we underestimate the impact we're having just by doing what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I never go out there thinking, okay, I'm the greatest actor in the world and here's what I'm going to do. I go out there and say, I'm going to try to do my best job.
Mm-hmm.
And I think theater is unique. It's like, like so many other performing arts. All you do is go out there and do your best job. Mm-hmm. And then when people respond and you bring them joy, that to me is where the real heart of the matter is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you tell a story, Brian?
No.
No, yeah.
Brian.
Yeah. I know you must have one or two.
I've got a ton. But that's
so
the thing.
Some that are relevant.
I couldn't, well, no. Well, then, none. It's interesting because what you just said, it's when you asked this question, you sent the question out, I went down, it's like my mind split into two different routes, because I've got the route that's significant for me as an actor and the route that has been significant for me as a director.
Mm-hmm.
Directing wise, Twilight. There's something about that. I've directed it twice, both times, although I think the second time was more meaningful for me, because the first time was in the Ann Arbor, Ipsy area, where you find shows like that. The second time was in a more conservative town like ours, so it was a thrill to be able to do that. And I had an amazing cast, three of which are in this room right now. That to me was a huge one. Acting wise, I could probably go back to just like what Ron said. I mean, the first show I ever did in high school was a musical, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. And I said I'd never get back on stage again. I thought it was the worst experience in the world. But I had to sing, and I don't like singing on stage. So then when my friends talked me into the second show of the year, which was Arsenic and Old Lace, and I came out as Jonathan Brewster with the makeup and all that, and I heard people gasp. Before I even said my first line, people gasped at what they had done with makeup. There was that moment where it was like, oh, they've noticed me. Mm-hmm. They've noticed that, you know, I'm already up there, and they're seeing me. So that started it. The last year of high school, we did Medea. I played the nurse. I had that big speech about describing the death of the children being burned alive. That was very important to me, because one of our teachers had a doctorate in Greek mythology. And so my buddy who played Jason said, come on, let's go. Let's go talk to her. And so we went and talked to her. I was like, yeah, okay. Talked to her, and she just had nothing but praise that a high school could do a show that well. And then she pointed me out personally, and I was like, okay, you know.
$20 that went spent well.
Well,
but go ahead.
No, I was going to say that I think is something. So when you talk about that, that's how it feels good to us as doing it. But have you ever...
Go ahead.
Okay, have you ever played that mental game? It's like, where would I be if I didn't have community theater in my life now? You know, I wonder if that's where we should start our story. It's like, how would my life... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But no, I mean, think about it. Where would you be if you hadn't had community theater?
Yeah.
I mean, some people would say, well, probably pretty much the same. But no, I think one of the things we say is I could say my life is richer because of community theater. Mm-hmm. If I had gone the route, as a lot of young actors do, and say, well, I'm heading off to New York. I'm heading off to L.A. I'm going to try to make it there. But like 90% of the actors who do that, mm-hmm. you don't make it. Mm-hmm. Where would you be? You'd be there with, I think, a hole in your life, kind of watching other people do what you know you can do yourself. Mm-hmm. With community theater, you still get to do that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so.
And you know, eat on a regular basis.
Important.
priorities.
But I think it fills that space, but it not only fills the space artistically for me, but it's my social network. It is mm-hmm. where I've made all my friends, mm-hmm. Which comes into a problem with fundraising, which we'll talk about later.
Your friends are broke.
When it comes to tapping into your personal circle of influence, as one of our members would say, it's like, you are my circle of influence. but again, you know, I think that's something that's also underappreciated. It's like, we talked last episode about, you know, are we a group that puts on theater that has social activities, or are we a social club that does theater? There is that still, regardless of what you want to do, there is still that social aspect.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
And because we know ourselves, and that's like, say, where our friends come from. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, just think of all the potlucks you would have missed out on.
I know.
I was wondering who was going to hit the first potluck joke. Thank you, Karen.
Who has a crock pot that they got after a buffet?
No.
I'm thinking Bob must.
I normally take mine home.
Yeah, me too. Can I finish?
I just steal Tupperware after the potlucks.
Can I finish my stories?
Yes. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
I thought you were done.
No.
You know, I have these random thoughts. I got to get them out.
I appreciate that. No. I think as an actor, the two roles that really hit me, not because I was proud of what I did, but I was part of a show that affected the audience. And one was up in Nipsey, and that was Bent, which I've talked about over and over and over. And the other one, honestly, was from Players, and it was out of all the we've done in Players, and I'm putting this as actor, not director, because I think Twilight is probably up there. But as an actor, Godspell. Mm. There was something about that show that brought that audience in. And when we were carrying John Coker, who played Jesus in that, when we were carrying him down the steps and out the back doors, people were weeping. And I thought, we got him. Mm-hmm. They were, Dave. They were.
I'm not doubting you.
I don't know. You gave me this little.
Couldn't you acknowledge the source material as some of their deep devotion?
Well, sure. Well, sure. But I have seen shows that have been done about, you know, about the Bible that everybody walked out going. So I don't
Let's
necessarily.
Let's not bring Broderick Matthew Broderick
into it.
But remember, Bob, a script is just words on a page until an actor brings it to life.
That's you mean right. It's suggested?
We didn't say that.
No. I was looking for a new catchphrase, and I think that's going
to
be it.
To piggyback on what you said, I was in Diary of Anne Frank that we did back in the mid-90s, and that was another show that, you know, when we start banging those 2x4s as the Nazis off stage. Mm-hmm. And you felt the fear was palpable. Mm-hmm. In that theater.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though everybody knew, I mean, what was going to happen, but it was just you were feared for that family.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those things like, okay, wow, this is. Meanwhile, Val and I are laughing our heads off, banging the 2x4s. But it was one of those moments where just that silence and just that you could just sense that fear.
Yeah. Yeah. But I will also say any show that I've been in where I can make, where I can bring the audience, I can bring that show to stop with laughs, has meant more to me than, and I know, and I agree with all of you, that silence. And I've been in shows with that as well, where I've been able to pull off that silence. Boys Next Door, I had a wonderful speech with Arnold that I could hear little tears, you know, people. For me, if I can hear them laugh, if I can get them to just, the show stops for a second while the laughter continues, that to me has always been my all-time favorite. Mm-hmm. That gives me the best feeling in the world. Mm-hmm. I'm done now.
I doubt that.
No. You're right.
but is that actually some of the power of theater? It's like you not only make them, excuse me.
We'll be right back.
Yeah, still need that cough button. We not only to make people laugh, to make them cry, but actually to let them experience the human condition through the eyes of someone else.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because I think there is that magic transformation to the audience when you're watching a play where somehow you actually put yourself into that play itself.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've talked before about, like, when I go on stage, I've left this world. As Ron just pointed out, you become somebody else. But to me, as an actor, you go in there and not only am I someone else, but I'm someplace else.
Right.
You know, the way I remember Arsenic and Old Lace, I remember being in this Victorian mansion when it was just a set.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You remember dragging that body through the window and throwing it in the...
Never mind that the leg kept falling off. It just...
One little mistake.
But I mean, for the actor, and I think the same kind of transformation happens for the audience too.
Oh yeah, and that reminded me, and I probably should have just said this one and shut up. But I played Ken Talley Jr. in The 5th of July, and he was a Vietnam vet. He was a gay Vietnam vet who comes back to Missouri to his family's home. When that show was over, I had one person on the second night, I believe, come up who was a vet, and he thanked me.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that meant a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm now thinking, too, in the difference between theater and other mediums, or media, I guess is the right plural. I have walked out of movies saying, well, there's 2 hours, I'll never get back.
Bojack's Tarzan.
Even the worst play I've seen... And I will not mention what it was, but it's out there. I'm not counting about Officer and a Gentleman. But even the worst play I've seen, I've never walked out and saying that was not worthwhile experience. I've actually learned.
Lovers Part 2.
That's, I was waiting.
Okay, never mind. My argument is null and void.
I have done my job. Up and away.
But I have learned things from even the worst plays.
I see what you're saying.
Even if it was, never do that show.
I was going to piggyback on that because when you sent this question out, I pulled out my list of what I've done and, you know, what I've been involved in on stage, off stage. And you know, I think through every experience, I've grown and I've changed and I've progressed as a theater person, as a backstage, as an onstage person. And so when people ask, you know, what was your favorite role you ever did? I'm like, my favorite role is always the last thing I did because I feel that I've left my best that last time, you know? And I think when you don't feel that anymore and it's motions, or if we're doing a show just for the dollars, you know, I've been with directors that really aren't connected and it trickles through the whole production, that they're not vested. There's a different reason they're doing that. There's a backstory there that you don't know as an actor. But when everybody's firing and going ahead and putting their best forward and you cross that finish line, it's just an amazing experience every time.
I know what you're saying, but it always blows my mind, and I know we've talked about this in the last off and on in the 60-some episodes we've done, directors that Bob's talked about, directors that have come in and saying, okay, I'm only doing this because then I can do my show, blah, blah, blah. Number one, I understand that, you know, in a lot of theater, there's give and take. You know, well, if you do this for me, I'll do this for you, blah, blah, blah. I do a lot of blah, 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 blahs. But what I don't get is that I can't understand a director that can't find something to love about the show they're doing, or they can't find a connection. And I'll talk about just a most recent experience with myself. I offered to be an assistant director for a Christmas show as part of a deal that was, but... And you know, we all know it.
Imagine.
I mean, it wasn't a shady deal. It was just if you agree to this, I will help you with your show. I'll be assistant director. But it took me less than a heartbeat when we were in the middle of that show to enjoy the kids, to appreciate what the story was. I mean, I found something that was worth fighting for to enjoy and to make the show as good as it can. You know what, Dave, Ron, just never mind. I'm out.
I'm out. Just sitting here.
I see the look.
Ron's the one who making.
I just want to comment on those shady backroom deals Carol was talking about. It made the Democratic National Convention of 1964 look like nothing. I mean, just.
Can we talk politics?
I'm with you, Brian, though. It's like
if you the white smoke or the dark smoke, whichever you prefer.
Yeah. Yeah. If you've agreed to do a show, you better find something to like about it.
Yeah.
What a disservice it is to do to anyone to say, oh, okay, well, I'm just going to get through this.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, we may find yourself with a show you don't like, but figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
Or frankly, have the guts to walk away.
Right.
I mean, better to no board of directors wants to hear me say this. Better to cancel a show than to do it with people who'd have nothing vested in it.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
I understand that there's huge financial ramifications for a lot of groups if you cancel a show, especially since you may not get your money back for royalties or something. But boy, if you got people who aren't committed to doing that show and giving their all to it, you're doing your audience a disservice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's so that always it blows
Brian,
my mind.
I've got some bad news for you.
Oh Lord!
I'm kidding.
Yikes!
Yay! I'm going on vacation. The show that Monroe Community Players is starting to work on right now that'll be going up on in February. February 16th, 17th, and 18th, Becky's New Car. Now, that's a show Players had been wanting to do for a long time.
Pre-COVID.
The COVID hit. We had a director that said, I don't think I can do this after all. I mean, there was a lot of things. Now, the first time I read that show, the very first time, I got to the end of that show and the last few pages and went, what is this? But I found enough in the show and in those characters that made me go, you know what? This is a good show. And since if we can pull the characters off, that ending's going to work no matter what we do. Mm-hmm. I'm still not.
Don't give it away.
I'm not a fan of it, but, it is what it is.
It's interesting.
It is very interesting, but,
it's a thinker. It's a thinker.
It is a thinker. It's a comedy, but by the end you're like, what's going on here? And I really do appreciate it. But mostly I just wanted to tell that story so that we can promote Becky's New Car for anybody in the Monroe area. That will be February 16th, 17th, and 18th. Thank you, Dave.
2024.
Yeah. Starring. Oh, we promote other people's shows.
Starring Kathleen McBee as Becky.
That's true.
And don't shake your head. And Mr. Ronald Roberts as his her husband Joe, and our own Dave War as Walter
Flood.
Walter Flood. Yes. So I got three great actors in the
show. Sophisticated.
I got
Walter.
Seven actors, great actors in the show.
Yeah.
And Brian directing. So
We'll get there. It'll still be a good show.
I seem to recall, and kind of ties into this conversation too, is like somebody saying last night or after a rehearsal that they were re-energized and re-enthused, and how much sometimes you get weighed down with the administration of the group and you forget the joy it is to be doing what we are meant to be doing, which is putting on plays.
And that kind
did I hear that correctly, Brian?
I don't. You know what? I was. You know,
deny
meth
everything.
Is a hell of a drug, Dave. So
deny everything, Brian. Deny everything.
I saw the joy in his eyes, folks.
Yes, you are right. I mean, there is no, there is nothing greater than that creative process of discovering your characters, discovering what these actors will do. Seeing vignettes, seeing moments that you put on that stage that just look perfect, or at least perfect to you. I mean, so
even when one of your actors, who shall remain unnamed, is coming in saying, "You know, this set makes no sense. I think we need to redo it. You are the director. Fix this." And I'm not sure who did that.
I just want to piggyback. want to piggyback on that, on how inspiring and motivating that kind of energy is to the entire cast. When, you know, it's contagious, and that's the kind of thing you want to grow and build on and spread. And that's why people do it and come back.
Yeah. I hope people come back for the next one.
They will.
They will.
They always come back.
Because I need some women, and I don't say that very often.
So, folks, here's kind of the challenge as we talk about the story of theater. In one sentence, can you say why community theater is important to everyone?
Everyone?
Everyone.
Society, you know, the big picture. You're talking to a friend who's never been to see a show. How do you say in one sentence, here's why you need to go see a show with, you know, some community theater? Stop making fun of us. Here's
why. It's cheaper than a bar night.
Well,
that's very deep, Bob.
For me,
to piggyback on that,
it is.
But it starts a conversation.
It does.
Yeah. It's the live theater part of it. I mean, but
who cares? What's?
But I
can sit at home and watch theater.
That's the difference between. I think it pulls you in, and you're part of it more with live theater. That's the difference of watching something on television where an elephant's being born, or being there when an elephant's being born. I mean, the difference of just something on the screen versus being immersed and part of the audience, the part of the whole, it's the fourth piece. I mean, you don't have a show without an audience. It's just rehearsal. So they're the key last element to bringing it all together. And that's why I think it's so different than any other medium. Anything that you can scroll through your phone is that live connection. A lot of times when you come out of a show, at least for me, I feel some kind of connection with the characters differently than when I've watched a movie, you know. So.
Yeah, first of all, props for a vivid analogy or simile.
Well, I was going to offer an analogy that might be a little more relatable, as interesting as yours is. It's the difference between watching the Tigers play on TV or actually going up to the field and participating in a game. Because when you go see live theater, you are participating. The audience is just as important as the people on stage. So it's more of a, you're more involved than if you're just watching a movie or something. So.
Something that just came to me, you could almost say it's a live social media experience, because you are part of a community and you can exchange ideas on the fly. You don't have to type it out. There's no limit to how many characters you can use on X. When you're a live audience, you can register your reactions in real time with everyone who's there, and it's a I just kind of lost that train. But it's a live, it's about being part of a community. And if everybody wants to be part of a collective, and everybody's opinions matter to everybody, well, here's a chance to come and see something and have an opinion on it.
Well, let me ask a question. Have you ever been at intermission and struck up a conversation with somebody who didn't know on what you just saw?
Heavens
and
no.
What's no?
I don't talk to people. Are you kidding?
Well, Kathleen,
that's what programs are for. You sit there and
born has never been brought up at intermission, so I'm not sure.
You check to see who is in the audience, so you can go talk to look like you're mingling with people.
But no, I'm kidding, of course. But yes,
I think that's part of Ron's point of the connection. I mean, you've got a total stranger next to you. You've just witnessed something together, and you're like, "Hey, wow, what did you think?"
Or do you get the eye roll?
Maybe I do, but I don't pay attention to it.
Because you get to be in the room where it happens.
Ooh.
Yeah, Brian.
There's our
good night, folks.
Checking off the Hamilton reference. There we go.
From out of left field, there it comes, folks.
Well, you know,
you folks out there didn't even realize we were slipping Hamilton references in
yeah.
For 65 episodes, but there it is.
Poor Carol took the sports reference from Ron.
Well, did she waste her shot then?
Oh.
Ron's not going to miss his shot because he, you know. But no, that it's what I meant about the audience being another character in the show, is mm-hmm. that you don't, like, you walk out of a movie or you're watching a movie at home and you might say something to, you know, your family members or whatever, but it's more of an internal experience. Whereas with live theater, because you are part of it, you're in the moment, it becomes a very connected type thing. You will exchange eye rolls, or you'll laugh with the people next to you, or, you know, when you're at a show, something will happen and the people in front of you or behind you, you'll turn around and say something to them. And I think that's what makes a difference, is that the audience is an integral part of a show, and you get that connection, yes. and you get that
and
community.
To their credit, I think movie audiences want to try to replicate that in theater, because you'll go to a good movie and people applaud at the end. It's like, mm-hmm. who are you applauding for?
Oh, my husband complains about that.
Whereas when you go to a play, when you applaud,
you sit on your hands.
You know, the performers are there able to give you that feedback right away. Thank you so much, and all that. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
and I think Carol and Kathleen nailed it. You are part of the show. You are that fourth wall. You're the fourth wall. So you are in the middle of it with the actors from the beginning to the end. And it, you know, and on your thing about, you know, sure, a TV, you know, or if you're watching a movie at home, you can turn. And I have a million times I've turned to my husband and said, "Why did you choose this?"
Yeah.
Which is something I've never said during a theater production. Why did you make me come to this? Well,
oh,
but I've never seen Lover's Part 2 either, so.
And to the people that may have done that or considering doing it, please don't let this influence you. It's set in fun. We love everybody. We love all our other friends and groups. But you got to admit, that one was a clinker no matter who was doing it.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Lovers. Yeah.
So please.
It's not everyone's cup of tea. I've seen it 3 times now.
And just to make sure
it is still not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
And so some of you figured out where I've seen it, but it's fine productions technically. But yeah, the script itself, I think, you know, is what that Irish drama.
I think even if you go to a show that, you know, like this, that you didn't particularly love or maybe even like, you could still have respect. I think a healthy respect as a theater person for the people that got up there, memorized those lines, delivered that show, even if it didn't. I can think of certain shows that, no, were not my cup of tea. I would mm-hmm. probably not go see again. They're not on my list of, you know, we've all experienced that, but.
I've experienced, an officer and a gentleman. I've even experienced, and I've mentioned it before in past podcasts, we went on Broadway and saw, and I can't think of the name, it was an LB show, and I can't think of the name of it now. It's extremely dated, but it starred John Lithgow and Glenn Close. Now, the show was boring. To me, it was, you could see the dust coming off the whole show. It was so dated. But it was still fascinating to watch two experts weave their magic with their characters. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, mm-hmm. you'll always be able to find something to look forward to and to find that'll impress you, unless it's Lover's Part 2, I guess.
Well,
have we bashed Lover? We haven't done it in a while.
We haven't in a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm a little surprised.
It wasn't funny until now.
Yeah. And just looking over this list of area shows, good news, Lover's Part 2 is showing virtually everywhere. People have gotten so curious about it now that you can go any. No, I'm kidding.
We'll do it right.
We'll show them. We'll show them how it's done right.
It's that fine pine paneling. No one will get that reference.
Well, and yes. No one. And yes. That one's too close to home. But no one will, you know. We talk about the endings of Becky's New Car, but Lovers is the same kind of ending.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Ending?
Yeah. You have to go read it. Go see it. Hey, speaking of seeing things, it looks like it may be time for Broadway Brian, to enter the house again and tell us what he last saw when he was in New York City a few weeks ago, months ago, whenever. I think I want to hear about what they're doing with Spamalot on Broadway and why your community theater should or should not do it. Take it away, Broadway Brian.
Thanks, Dave.
I think Bob's trying to be the helicopter.
Oh. Is that what you're
like? I hope that's what
that
is.
It's the crowd.
Oh,
oh, the it's audience. The crowd applauding.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I hear helicopter. I'll make that. Well, it's not a skydiver.
I swear to God, I thought they could fly.
Yes. God is my witness.
God is my witness. Yeah, we went and saw Spamalot, which was my second time seeing it on Broadway. We did have the privilege to see it originally with the original cast. It was fine. It was okay. I don't know where the disconnect came with me on this show. The actors were good. The music's the same. Some of the jokes were updated for what's going on in the world now compared to when we saw it the first time. And yeah, maybe for me it was the fact that I saw it with Tim Curry and David Hyde Pierce and who's the guy with the voices?
Hank Azaria.
I mean, I saw him with those three. So, and it was new. I mean, the whole Lancelot twist at the end was new and it made it funnier. This time it was like, okay, it's you know, still love the music. I think it's one of the music in Spamalot a lot. It was definitely, it was cut, and I'm trying to think what I want to say here, and now I know that I'm going to edit some of this, but
did they keep the cheerleaders?
Oh yeah, they kept the cheerleaders. Okay. But they didn't, it was a scaled down production. Mm-hmm. They didn't have as many of the sight gags. There wasn't the big foot that comes down. They didn't do that. It was just very scaled down. I don't know if it was because it was a smaller theater.
Well, and the show's been running now, what, must be close to 20 years?
Well, it had left Broadway. It had left Broadway for a while. So this was their return, so to speak.
Because I do know in the original, at least one of the early touring companies, when I saw it at Toledo, there were 2 feet that came down, you know, the foot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because unfortunately at the end production, the 1 foot did not work well.
Ooh.
They had some sort of technical problem backstage. Yeah.
I don't know.
At least my memory is 2 feet. Maybe it was just one. But
I did get tickled that in this production, of course, in the original, the voice of God is played by John Cleese. In this one, it was Steve Martin, which cracked me up because as soon as you know he starts talking, I'm like, that's Steve Martin, ain't it? Yeah. So of course, you know, we're looking around for Steve Martin. But it was a good show. I mean, the cast did fine. Everything was fine. It just seemed to be lacking something, this production. And I could not put my finger on it then. I can't put my finger on it now. I still hold that it's one of the best musicals that I have seen in a long time. I enjoy that kind of comedy. The thing is, we also went with two women who had never seen it and who do not like Monty Python. So, you know, they walked out of there going,
Brian, thank you.
Brian, you just walked yourself right into that one. Oh, my goodness.
What? Does not like Monty Python. Oh, I find more women that don't like Monty Python than do.
It's
yes.
The Three Stooges and the Groucho Marx.
Yeah, there's certain things that there's a line there, and I don't know. For some reason, Monty Python. Do you like Monty Python, Kathleen? See?
I do.
Well, Carol, you are a unique breed, though. I will
but
give you that.
Even when they're in drag, Carol, you think it's funny?
What?
Even when they're in drag, you think it's funny?
Yes, you keep misremembering my point. My point is not that. Never mind.
I think he's just trying to press your buttons. Is what he's trying to do.
I'd say he's doing more than trying to press your buttons. I think he got him in pretty firmly there.
But I will say that, and we know that it is being done by community theater because of, it has been done here in town a couple of times with another group
in Croswell.
Right, right, and RCA,
and I think someone in Toledo has already done it
as well. Yeah, I mean it's a great show, and I love it. I love the whole thing. This production just didn't do anything for me. I mean, I could have probably seen something just as good at the Croswell, that show just as good at the Croswell, or Toledo or even here in Monroe. So,
do you think there's a difference between when you see it the first time, not knowing what to expect, and then going and seeing it again?
Oh, absolutely.
You know? I think it's mandatory. Yeah. Absolutely. You take someone that's never seen it.
Yeah.
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 Maybe a group of 10 of you, just make sure one is still going, what did they say? What did they say? Everybody's laughing.
And exactly. And I think you're right on that, because the stuff that I did laugh the most were the newer jokes that had been added that I wasn't expecting. So,
and the show is almost 20 years old. It premiered in Chicago at the Schubert Theater, I think, in 2004, according to Wikipedia. So,
really?
So it'll be approaching in December of 2004. So it'll be 20 years old this year.
Be almost 20.
Whoa. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So anyway, so...
So it's another show that we all think of as new.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's
new
not.
In our youth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But...
Well, and I think when they release it, they're probably going for two different audiences. One that loved it the very first time and wants to see it again, mm-hmm. and then trying to expose new people mm-hmm. to something they may not have ever seen. So yeah.
Bring your kid to Monty Python. If they're yeah, going to go to college,
yeah.
you need to know Monty Python.
Yeah. Well, and this is, because Spamalot, I'm just kind of wondering here, I think is almost a gimmick show. Yeah. Not in the sense that it's a little different than it's not a true adaptation of the Monty Python and the Holy Grail, mm-hmm. which is what you would expect first. It's loosely adapted from that movie, but I think part of it is because it is Monty Python, mm-hmm. And that may be why it left Broadway, did its tour, and then they gave it a rest and then bring it back. Whereas a show like Lion King, which is also a movie adaptation. I feel you can go see time and time again, knowing exactly what you're going to see, but it still has a similar effect. Whereas Spamalot, because it's depending on humor, once you know all the jokes, it gets a little tougher. But having said that, you know, I've seen Book of Mormon at least twice, and it's just as funny the second time around.
And I will every year, at least once a year, watch the Holy Grail, the movie, and I still laugh at the same things over and over.
Yeah. So it sounds like just for whatever reason, this production just kind of missed the mark.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even know if I can say that. I mean, it might have been me.
Because who knows? It's a different cast and everything, but, you know, which kind of talks to how important a cast can be in a show.
Oh, yeah.
But on the other hand, if you do it right, it shouldn't matter whether it's Tim Curry or
Joe Schlob off the street. Right. We had done the producers, and a couple of weeks later, I'm in a parking lot, and this woman comes up to me and says, "Excuse me, were you in the producers that were just up?" I'm like, "Yes, I was. I just wanted to tell you that my husband and I have seen the producers done in Chicago, on New York, and in Toronto, and still we preferred your version because you guys were having fun." Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To the other, they got the hint that it was just basically a job. We were having fun.
Yeah. And there, Bob, is your sentence to give to people why they should come see community theater.
It's
because it's
than
still fun for us.
And it's still cheaper than a bar night.
Yeah, but it's not, you know, when you get down to it, it's not a job for us. It's a passion. It's a love. Mm-hmm. You can tell when you're going to community theater production, everybody in that show is committed to it because they enjoy doing it, not because they have to do it. Mm-hmm. I know Ron's giving me a look, but really, no, really. I think everybody does really enjoy it. You know, otherwise, they wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
That's true.
Yep, well, I agree.
I mean, again, because it's the same thing. Nobody's forced to direct a show. Nobody's forced to be in a show.
And unless you have really juicy photos.
Except Ron, because every show that he assists and directs, he ends up in.
Well, backroom deals. But he's getting something out of it, right?
Yeah. You know. Oh, yeah. Okay. I don't know that.
Well, and on that note, folks, it looks like we are about out of time for this episode. Once again, as always, we all would like to thank each and every one of you out there for listening. We appreciate the support that you not only give us, but that you give to keeping theater alive in your communities and doing such great things to make people love community theater. We also appreciate feedback and conversation from you, so be sure to visit our Facebook page for more fun. Take a look at that Christmas card. Just look for the Monroe Community Players podcast or for the Art and Business of Community Theater. You should be able to find it either way. Emails may be sent to mcppodcast, all one word, at monroecommunityplayers.org. And, of course, if you want to keep up with the latest shows and activities of the Monroe Community Players, go to our website at monroecommunityplayers.org. We generally do release 2 episodes a month. Take a moment to subscribe, like, and otherwise rate. Help us to spread the word that we are here so we can help spread the word that you are there. I guess that works. The Art and Business Community Theater is presented by the Monroe Community Players, recorded at the Monroe Public Access Podcast Studio high atop the Benish Building in historic Monroe, Michigan. And before I leave, we do have a quick question for everyone. We'd like to know from you, what is your favorite theater moment? Mm. For the love of theater. Oh, yes, Bob?
Can we say that this will be up before Valentine's Day? So in the spirit of our Christmas cards, if you hear us, send us a Valentine's card.
Send us a Valentine's
card. Especially like those little ones that you get when third grade or second grade.
Yes, we're getting
Let
greedy.
Let us know that we're here.
And if you can make Bob look like Dr. Octopus this time instead of Craven, that'd be really great. Thank you.
Yes. Can I at least get Green Goblin?
Okay, yeah. Green Goblin.
Yeah, if we need to know where to send them, we'll put a little one of those little shoe boxes decorated up outside the studio. But that would be to send them to P.O. Box 23, Monroe, Michigan 48161. Be sure to reference Green Room or podcast on the envelope so that gets routed to the right place, because you know the players get so much mail.
So much mail. Don't want it to get lost in the bills.
But for the love of theater, we are the groupies, and we will see you in the green room.
Green Room.
Thank you, Brian.
Green Room.
Well, goodbye. And don't think it hasn't been a little slice of heaven, because it hasn't.